Hello and welcome to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew and this is Stepping Out. The stories you are about to hear are real. This is a 12-step meeting on the air, so kick back, listen in. If you ever wondered what was going on inside those rooms, you're going to find out right now. Tonight we have our friend Harry. Harry's going to talk to us about how he conquered his addiction with drugs, right? Is that right?
We're going to talk about the drug thing, right? Sure.
All right, let's talk about the drug thing.
All right, we'll talk about the drug thing.
All right, Harry, where does it start for you? I mean, how old were you when you first started getting high, and what's it like today?
Well, my actual remembrance of picking up any substances, I was around 12. I know before that, being brought up in a Jewish household, not a healthy Jewish household, a dysfunctional one, but I do remember as a kid, they used to, you know, if you had toothache or something or other, they used to put alcohol in my mouth, you know, to numb it. But my first memory was actually, it was around 12 years old, and it was alcohol, and I picked up Mogendovit. It was either Mogendovit or Manischewitz.
Oh, okay. I know what Manischewitz is.
It's a sweet wine.
That's got to be a hell of a hangover.
It was. It was. It was everything that it that you can possibly imagine. The vomiting, the hangover, the diarrhea. I mean, you know, the next day feeling like...
Yeah.
Also, around that time was my introduction to marijuana, too.
Okay.
So, this was the 50s, and...
Oh, my God, marijuana in the 50s. Who'd have thunk it?
I thought it. And, you know, coming in the rooms for a few 24/7s now, I always hear people share when they first, their first introduction to whatever substance that they picked up, all of a sudden they came out of this, their closet or this, you know, this bud that all of a sudden bloomed into this rose. For me, it didn't work that way. If anything, it it kept me, you know, quite withdrawn in myself. I mean, you know, see, I believe that drugs and alcohol are just a symptom of this disease.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back at my childhood and as a young boy, I had all the symptoms.
Like what?
Low self-esteem, escaping, not liking myself, hating myself as a child. And I'm talking 6, 7, 8 years old, I can remember feeling less than. And also pretty much being reassured of that, too, because coming from a dysfunctional household and from a divorced... my parents were divorced, and my mother, who today I have, you know, understand, had gender been a parent. She didn't have the tools to be a parent.
Mm-hmm.
She had 3 children and was in her own disease. And my mother was a gambler, and this is what, you know, and gamblers are same as picking up any drug or any drink. So I didn't have a, you know, she was not home. And if she was, she wasn't there for her kids.
Sure.
Yeah. So, and also being told by her, you know, I wasn't so much physically abused by her, but verbally abused by her. But, you know, you're ugly, you're stupid, you'll amount to nothing. So when you're being told by your parent, you sort of believe
that's
that.
Tough. Yeah. That's tough.
Yeah, I had an older brother and an older sister. My sister was able to get out of the house at a young age, and my brother did so too. But before that, my relationship with him was he just used to beat the living heck out of me. So, you know, so I was pretty much isolated then. As far as my education, I was never really supervised, so I never really attended school. So when I was actually went through elementary school and found out later that for, you know, from kindergarten to sixth grade, I believe I was maybe a year and a half absent from that, and really never got past the seventh grade. So,
wow,
yeah, I was pretty much on the streets as a young guy.
What were you doing out there?
Where?
Yeah,
on the streets?
Yeah.
Existing.
Yeah.
You know, just basically running, trying to make a, you know, not a living. I went to Nome from a living, just, you know, putting shelter on my over me and food in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And running with, you know, also when I was born in Brooklyn, and when I was about, I think, 8 or 9 years old, my mother went to Florida, so I relocated over there, and I didn't fit in over there either. I mean, you know, I just felt like, first of all, I moved to Miami, and then I was there for a short length of time, then Miami Beach, and there's different locations in Miami Beach, so I went from school to school to school, so there's another reason that I never, you know, mm-hmm. attended or had a formal education. Trying to fit in. Basically, I think all my life I was just trying to fit in, to be part of, to be accepted, to be loved. And so as a kid, you know, what was I going to find? I was going to find the guys that were out there like me, you know, the delinquents. You know, I'm the guy that comes from the era of DA, which is, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Sure, the old duck's ass.
The duck's ass.
That's right.
You know, and the leather jacket.
Sure.
And then the
Bill Hill. And all that good
and
stuff.
And the Bill Hill, you know.
Nice.
Trail, you know.
It's so rock and roll, baby. That's good
stuff. That was it. That was rock and roll. But,
sure.
But I didn't feel, as much as I wanted to be part, I was never part of anything. I was a chameleon. I just wanted to, I wore every hat you can possibly imagine. Every hat. If need be, I was African American. If need be, I was Puerto Rican. If need be, I could even pass for Asian if I had to.
It's funny you talk about fitting in. I think that there's one universal truth that we have from fellowship to fellowship to fellowship to story to story. I always hear that. I always hear that. I just wanted to fit in. I never felt like I belonged. I never felt like I fit in. And everybody always, it's almost a prerequisite for you know, the fill in the blank disease. It doesn't matter. It's just everybody always is there. And it's amazing. You know, it's there's got to be something to that. You know, I don't know what it is. I haven't figured it out yet, but there's a common thread there. And, you know, one of these days, maybe we'll figure out what the hell the cause of that is.
I think that common thread is what keeps us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You never know.
The unity.
Yeah.
About first tradition. Anyway, so I basically ran. I ran a lot. I got involved with some, you know, juvenile delinquent stuff mm-hmm. when I was younger, you know, stealing cars, and I don't drive. So I figured that went out. And ended up driving it into a house and walking away from that, I remember. Mm. Getting picked up the next day, though. Stuff like that. And around 17, I figured the best thing I could do for myself was join the service.
Okay.
So I upped my draft and got refused by them.
Why?
It was in between Korea and Vietnam.
Okay.
And looking at my school and my juvenile record, they gave me a 1-Y classification, told me if we ever have any major disaster to get in touch with them. Needless to say, Nam came around, I didn't get in touch with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this was what it was about, you know. And my I'm not getting the word out. There you go. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Reintroduction to drugs around that time, too.
Okay.
Because what happened is I left Florida and ended up back in New York and started hanging around the village.
Ah.
And this was like in between the bohemian and the beatnik. And then we came into the hippie era.
There you go.
So I exploded.
How the hell do you not get taken? You know, like, you were trying to explain this before, that they just wouldn't take you. You know, and you tried your damnedest, yet, you know, you couldn't get...
Actually, I did try. I tried not just one of the branches, but all the branches. And if anything, being the fact that I was refused by them, it just fed right into that
low self-esteem
I had.
Yeah.
And by me, I thought they were taking the dregs of the earth. I mean,
right.
You know, but... What can you do?
So, as I said, yeah, you were in the village and you were making it, you know, you're kind of, I guess, doing that beatnik thing, right?
It was like in between. I think it was the end of the bohemian, the beatnik, and it was like the beginning of the hippie era.
Okay.
And as I said, that's where everything exploded. Also, that was, I should say, basically my reintroduction to drugs. Not that I didn't dibble and dabble before that, but that was when it all, you know, became the progression.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this disease is, the progression. And it started with the hashish and the pills, and it just continually progressed to hallucinogenics. And all of a sudden, again, like I said, trying to fit in, my hair started growing down to my tuchus. And, you know.
You just said tuchus. I haven't heard tuchus on the show yet. That's a first, all right?
Well, I told you, I came from a Jewish household. You know, and... And the beard grew, and needless to say, I started to do things to try to make a living. And as I said, pretty much the street was my way of making a living. Mm-hmm. I started dealing, and, you know, and one of the things in dealing, I was dealing hallucinogenics and grass, but one of the things is like, well, all of a sudden when you have a lot of people around you, and again, I was quite lonely, mm-hmm. and having a lot of people around me made me feel, you know, that it was me they were, but it wasn't, because whenever I was out of these things to deal, I just had no one around me, but I didn't see that, you mm-hmm. know. And I also, around that time, picked myself up. I'm from New York, as you know, we're being broadcast over here, but picked myself up and ended up pitching the state, living in commune in New Mexico for a while, ended up in San Francisco during the Haight days.
Cool.
You know, Topanga Canyon in Southern California. You know, I did that a couple of times and was living the life of the hippie. Peace, love, rock and roll, and plenty of sex. Because fortunately, I was around in the era of the birth control, and it was, you know, pill was released and women's liberation started, so it was a good time. I'm to say that I didn't have fun would be a lie. It was quite a bit of fun, but it was really, when I look at it and balance it out, it was really very short-lived, you know, because in 1969 I had gotten busted for dealing, got probation out of that, and ended up thinking I had to change, and I did. I cut my hair a little bit shorter and ended up working in discotheques. And at that time, I was working at a discotheque, which I used to patronize, ended up working there. And it was considered at that time the largest in the nation. It was the most well-known. Mm-hmm. It had a lot of celebrities coming there, highline people coming there, pimps and gangsters. It was wonderful. And I also started dealing there again. And also got more introduced to cocaine around that time. So the hallucinogenics were over with.
What year was this?
69. Yeah. I mean, I had tasted the, you know, coke before that, but really got more reintroduced to it, really got involved with the cocaine, started dealing it. And from peace, love, and rock and roll, I was also carrying a piece at that time, which is a gun. And the paranoia that came with it, you know, when you're staying up 3-4 days at a time. I don't know if I did 4, but 3 I definitely remember doing. The paranoia of the dealing, but, you know, and the constant partying. And it got kind of insane. And around that time, I also got introduced to heroin. I had tried it before, but mm-hmm. that introduction was close to 19 years straight.
Wow.
Of using it to the point that it ended me up in prison.
Wait a minute. So you did? We just went from 1969 to where? So how much heroin are we talking about over how long a period of time?
How long a period of time? Well, 69, 70, 16 years.
16 years.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I got clean in 85.
You got clean in 85.
In fact, this month I have 21 years.
Right on, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But let me back you up. So the first, did you start snorting it? Did you start shooting it? How did it come to you?
Well, snorting it for a very short amount of time and then shooting it.
And then shooting it?
To the point, as I said, I really have no more veins. The last places I used was my neck, my groin. Put me in hospitals with, fortunately, it turned out not to be endocarditis like Kathy had shared, but it turned out to be a hole in my lung.
Mm-hmm.
I also ended up with abscesses all over my body. I ended up in prison. I did a few years. I believed the lie that once a junkie, always a junkie, and I was going to die a junkie in some abandoned building with a needle stuck somewhere in me. And through the grace of God and through someone that 12-stepped me, a gentleman that unfortunately passed away from AIDS, which he contracted from this disease of addiction, 1983, came to me and told me about NA, Narcotics Anonymous.
And you were just, I guess, right about ready for it at that time? Or?
Well, I'm a believer no one gets here a minute before their time. So in 1983, I did go to a meeting, I was here in Manhattan, but I went with all the wrong reasons.
What were the reasons?
Well, I thought maybe he was just getting out of that roach-infested room I was living in, and just, you know, and seeing what was going on. And I went, and I listened to a qualification of an elderly black lady that was wonderful. I mean, I identified, but I wasn't ready because I had just shot dope before I went there.
Mm-hmm.
And went out for coffee with the people from the meeting. But there was a young lady there talking about her old man being a dealer, and that's all I can focus on. So it took me ending up in the hospital again. It ended up putting me back in the streets again. And in April of 1985, I was fortunate that I'm grateful that I kept that meeting list of NA back then. And at that time, we only had about 15 meetings in Manhattan. And I ended up going back to calling it up and finding a meeting in St. Mark's and just kept on coming back.
God bless you, man.
And my life is unbelievable today. I've been married in recovery. I've had open heart surgery in recovery.
Wow.
I have two beautiful daughters in recovery. And after 18 years of being with the same woman, I've been divorced in recovery.
Mm.
I don't pick up. That's the bottom line.
That's the bottom line.
The bottom line is I don't pick up. And as I said, on the 11th of this month, through the grace of God, a day at a time, I have 21 years of a wonderful life. I'm able to have friends in my life. I'm able to have unbelievable associations, you know, relationships.
Sure, man.
And mostly with myself. And I give back. I give back what was given to me freely. Today, it was a gift of, I also got involved with volunteering with pediatric AIDS children. And today I was an Easter Bunny for about, it was supposed to be 120 kids. Unfortunately, it only turned out to be about almost 50 kids.
Now, once again, you're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out.